You believe in Jesus?
Yes, I do.
Well, you're going to meet him.
You see what fun this is? It's going to get really exciting. I know what to do now. They've made it clear.
You warriors are good. Real good. The best.
This is the end of your rotten life, you motherfucking dope pusher.
We'd make one hell of a team, Snake.
The name's Plissken.
And we're back with another episode of 42nd Street Forever, the official podcast of Grindhouse Cinema Database. I'm Pete Roberts, and today I'm here with two special guests, Rob McGee of Exploitation Reviews and Ken from Gotham City Drive-In. Hey, how you doing, guys? Good to talk to you.
Doing great.
Awesome. Yeah, it's a pleasure to finally meet you guys. Huge fans of your work. I still can't believe I'm talking to you guys. One minute I'm reading Peter and Rob's reviews on like Toxic Avenger and Friday the 13th. Like here I am talking to them with a creepy ass bear in the chat. That's not running up. Parents in the Stuart Gordon film. 5 points if you get the reference.
So today's movie, we decided to talk about something like a kind of a controversial film, I guess you'd call it, from the Grindhouse era. Because we're trying to stay like in the confines of Grindhouse movies as opposed to like, you know, doing all types of stuff that's more modern. So this is like a real classic Grindhouse film from 1977. And it went by a bunch of different, had a bunch of different alternate titles like Bloodbath at 1313 Fury Road, Getting Even, Held Hostage, I Hate Your Guts, Staying Alive. And that was kind of capitalizing on the Bee Gees, you know, the Saturday Night Fever era. Like that's because it came out around
fun
that
fact,
same time.
Yeah.
And the hostages, the hostages,
okay.
Bloody Revenge. But most people will know it as Fight for Your Life.
That's how I know it.
Yeah. And I was just wondering, when did you guys first see this movie? Rob, you were saying you saw it first. I think we both saw it on the Blue Underground DVD.
Yeah. I had no idea about it back in the VHS days. I didn't learn about it until like the Blue Underground DVD came out in, I guess, what was that, like 2007
something like that? I think it was around that time, 2005 or 6 or 7. I can't really remember exactly, but I'm trying to think where I first actually heard. I guess I just heard about it on just in chat rooms or something, and someone told me to watch it because it was so crazy, and that's how I first discovered it. But I got that DVD, the Blue One, and it had a great audio commentary like we were talking about offline, you know, off the outside of this, and with like, you know, the Bill Lustig and the, I think it was the writer Straw Weissman and the other guy, what was the producer? I think the producer.
Cinematographer.
Oh, the cinematographer. Okay. And I forget exactly what his name was, but yeah, that was a good little, you know, just to have them commenting on all the stuff, you know, while they're watching all the craziness on screen. It's just, you know, it was kind of, you know, it gives you like a good background of like, you know, what they were thinking when they made it and stuff and that type of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was, you mentioned when we were chatting that Bill Lustig was on there too.
Right.
And I didn't know that. I had never listened to it before, but then I, because on the DVD that I have, it doesn't mention his name.
Because I guess he was like the moderator, right? He was like the moderator.
Yeah, exactly. So,
the peacemaker of the two.
Yeah, the peacemaker. But it's like, you know, but that was like kind of a good, you know, way to watch it, just to like, I watched it once without it, then I watched it with the commentary, and that just, you know, it's, I had the same thing happen with I Spit on Your Grave, because Joe Bob Briggs did an awesome commentary for that. Like, he really delved into, like, you know, the controversial aspects of it, and he like had a whole like theory of like what the real deal was and like why it was made and stuff. But anyways, that's another movie. But the star of this one was William Sanderson, and a lot of people a lot of people know him as like J.F. Sebastian from Blade Runner, and he was on what do you call it, Newhart, right? He was one of those guys, the hillbilly guys.
He was Larry.
This is my brother Daryl, my other brother Daryl. He was like on that.
Daryl and Larry.
So it was like, you know, he's actually a really good actor, and this movie was like, I guess he was saying in the interview that Josiah Howard did on the website. I was rereading that. And he said that he thought, like, you know, this movie was just going to, like, be, like, forgotten about in a week. But it ended up being, like, you know, kind of a, like, you know, it got, like, a really kind of popular in the grindhouses and stuff. And, you know what I mean? Over the years, it's really...
He actually said that he first got attracted to the role after responding to an ad in Backstage magazine. Right. It was a non-union movie, and at the time, he was barely in SAG, so he was afraid of doing it. He was young, desperate. Everyone kept telling him, Bill, you got to get the footage. It doesn't matter what it is. So he was building his reel. What he wanted was to be able to take a scene from the movie, show producers and show what he was capable of. And so, in other words, he was building his resume like most.
Well, that this was definitely like a good, I mean, I don't know, like, you know, if it was the best for your, you know, to show people. I guess it is, because it's such an extreme character. I mean, he's just, you know, does anybody want to, like, kind of give the synopsis of, like, what the movie's about? Or just
I could do it if you want.
Okay, sure.
Well, Fight for Your Life, the sensitive story of the world's biggest racist since Eugene Bull Connor, who, along with his motley crew of a Asian dude and a Latino dude, break out of prison, steal a car from a pimp after they steal his clothes as well, leaving him with the world's most funniest underpants with love symbols on it. Yeah, it's something like out of Looney Tunes or something. But they do every nasty thing under the sun. They rob a liquor store, kill a liquor store clerk in front of his baby.
That's a crazy story. That's like the kind of the first. Maybe after they kick the pimp out of the car. That scene is really crazy when they, like, he's like aiming the gun at the baby and stuff and all that stuff.
Yeah,
it's like nuts.
Because with the pimp stuff, they kind of offshoot it by having the pimp in his hard drawers, underwear, which is like, something out of a Cartoon Network cartoon some bullshit like that. But so after that, we come across the family in this film,
and he takes the girl hostage, and then he brings her back to the house. And that's where we meet the Turner family. Well, I think we kind of meet them before that actual scene, but we kind of, they're like the really nice people, like, who live like
very lovable. Yep. About as wholesome as the old lady from The Black Six, another recommended exploitation film. Seriously.
But I mean, they're just nice people, and the father is like a reverend or something. I think he's like a preacher or something, but. Mm-hmm. But then Jesse Lee Kane, played by William Sanderson, and Chow, and I forget the other guy's name. Is it Chico or
Chico? Yeah,
Chico. They end up taking the daughter hostage, bringing her back to the house, and then they, like, bust in, and that's where all the hell breaks loose. And he's like, you know, Jesse Lee Kane, ma'am, and then it all goes downhill from there.
It's like from there, more racial insults.
More racial insults
fly around, and he makes the father named Ted Turner. Yeah. And no, he does not spend his time in the movie trying to colorize Citizen Kane. That's different Ted Turner.
That's not that Ted Turner.
Thank God. Otherwise, we'd be seeing Captain Planet versus Jesse Lee Kane. But anyway, so Mr. Kane forces Ted, to do the world's most humiliating dance with a gun, saying, "Dance, you!"
Yeah, and he's like, obviously, he's like not saying, he's not using like really nice language when he's talking to the, you know, he's the movie is so, it's like the thing with this film is it's so offensive and over the top, it like almost kind of becomes funny, like, not like funny, you know, like kind of like a sick way, you know what I mean? That's the way I feel about it.
When it's I watch darkly it, comedic.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so, like, offensive. It's just, like, you just can't even believe he's saying the stuff he's saying and doing what he's doing, like, type stuff. Which is, like,
I think this was the only movie to make the UK's Video Nasties list for language.
I think I read something about that, Yeah, the film was The film was rejected for a UK cinema certificate in 1981 by the BBFC and later ended up on the DPP 72 list of official video nasties.
Mostly on the racist dialogue.
Yeah, definitely. It's so, like, nasty and, like, you know, crazy. The language.
At first, I thought it was because of the occasional moments of violence, because Floyd, the young kid, has a white friend who ends up getting killed.
Right.
Yeah, it turns out it's the white people that die in this one.
Yeah, this is that was a pretty sick scene too. When Chow cracks him over the head with a rock in the woods, and it's like,
yeah,
that
and
whole
Floyd
scene
is and Floyd, the young kid, for a change of once, isn't like one of these annoying child actors unfortunately typical in movies.
Yeah, and you know who that guy, that kid is? Reggie Bythewood. He directed Biker Boys, that movie Biker Boys. I never saw it, but I heard about it. So he grew up and directed that. And his wife's a director too. Gina Prince Bythewood, I think her name is.
Yeah, and in addition to and in addition to being likable for a change, he plays a role in the film's philosophical stance. For example, during the scenes where Kane is kicking around Ted, Floyd is telling his dad, "Dad,
stand
fight
up.
Back against this
right.
guy.
Stand up for yourself.
Stand up for yourself."
Yeah, right.
So he's like a mini black Paul Kersey in a way.
Yeah, he is. He's, you know, and they're always talking, like, and throughout the movie, like, little spots, they'll say black power. Like, I think at the very beginning, like, they're having, like, a conversation, and, like, and Floyd is kind of doing a little Muhammad Ali thing, and, like, you know, he's kind of, like, doing some...
In the Muhammad Ali t-shirt.
Right, and he's, right. And he's, like, saying all that stuff, and, you know, black power, and, you know, so they have
the
that.
Grandma,
so that's,
the,
like, the new generation, but then, I guess you could look at Floyd as like a young, like, Black Panther side of things, but then you have, like, you know, Ted Turner, who's probably like the Martin Luther King side of things. You know what I mean? Like, he's a very peaceful person.
Yeah.
And, you know, that type of
thing. Yeah. So, and also the mother in the wheelchair who,
the older grandmother.
Basically berates
she was really
Kane
good.
For having the gun.
She was a good
she
character.
Is so great.
Yeah, she is an awesome character.
Yeah. One of the most lovable grandmothers. Awesome.
Yeah, she is awesome.
Yeah.
She's
and
really
plus,
fighting back.
The dialogue itself is amazing.
She really insults him a lot.
The measure of a man is dignity, but the measure of a man is power.
Yeah, and then he starts hitting him with the Bible and stuff. It's just crazy stuff. Insane
oh
movie.
My god, the Bible being shoved down the throat as if it were Judas Colony of the Dead.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah,
shit.
The Bible beating scene is one that I don't like.
No, I don't like
it. Not because of like the violence or the beating or whatever, but they undercranked.
It's like super fast, like it goes like it's just weird,
exactly.
Like it has a weird effect to it.
Yeah,
visually,
it's like a Looney Tunes.
Yeah, it becomes kind of
like
strange.
Like,
it's like sped up. And
yeah,
be very, very quiet. I'm hunting black people.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it's
just tonally, it doesn't fit with what is going on.
Right, exactly.
I kind of ignored it. I mean, if we could have a pimp in his underwear, then why can't we have a Bible being
Bible
beat over
beating
someone?
I mean, it just, I think, like, throughout the movie, like, they just, like, keep pushing, like, the limits of, like, how, like, offensive it can be, like, they by doing this stuff. It's like, you know what I mean? Like, first, it's the
that's
language.
Exploitation
it's,
for you.
I mean, that's the whole, I guess that was the whole point. And the movie really is, like, made to be seen with an audience, too. Because it's like you know, that's why you made it. It's just like a cause and effect type movie. Like, you know, you can tell like the whole theaters must have been like in an uproar, like when you started like saying all this stuff, like offensive stuff, and you know what I mean? That's why he made it.
Which is why for my which is why for my page I did the drive-in totals on it, and much like with Robert, I actually have a story of how I came across this film. Actually, would you like me to tell it?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Well, so this took place during a particular event in our recent U.S. history. Oh, I don't know, during something, the murder of George Floyd, back when we realized the cops and the a-holes and all that shit.
Yeah.
So I decided for my page it'll be a specially themed week, either around films that are anti-racist or films that have black heroes and succeeding, like The People Under the Stairs or famously Dawn of the Dead, who I got to meet Ken Foray, by the way. So Fight for Your Life was one of them, because I looked up the film on Grindhouse Cinema database in the 20 Grindhouse Cinema Shockers Deprived Delights which has Cannibal Holocaust, Bloodsucking Freaks, Last House on the Left,
classics.
Previously reviewed Ilsa She-Wolf of the SS, Caligula, and also Fight for Your Life, alongside with Sallow and Goodbye Uncle Tom.
All those good little gems.
Yeah,
most nasty movies.
Stuff that,
yeah, it was. So that's where you found
left it, and the right don't want you to see.
When was that? Like last year or something? You found it, or when was that? A couple of
years ago? Last year, like 2 years ago. Like I said,
Floyd was 2020, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, this was during that whole thing where basically it was a special time where we needed some like black heroes or to make the point.
So that was the theme of your thing that you were doing.
Racism.
Yeah.
Yeah. And here's, and I did the drive-in totals for it, much like with the Joe Bob shtick. And we have 8 dead bodies, 4 boobies, 1 motor vehicle crash, 2 rape attempts, gratuitous jive talking pimp looking for a fix, and funny underwear, creepy slow-mo camera effects, knife to the stomach, rock to the head, bottle to the cranium, dog pee to the face, flash shard to the abdomen, blood pack forming, bitch slapping, force dancing, bimbo flinging, attempted lynching, kung fu, stick foo, Bible foo,
Bible
fire poker foo, and also mind games foo. 5 stars.
I mean, check really, that's like kind of it. Kind of like has everything you want in a grindhouse movie, like in that list of stuff. And to me,
yeah, pretty much the most craziest stuff that Mears Archie or Roger Corman could ever want.
It's such an amazing like movie to. I mean, I just try to imagine what it was like seeing this movie like in like a theater with like a bunch of people, like you know, just that's. I think the director said he really made it for that. That was the point of. He wasn't like trying to do anything except just make something like that was a total audience like you know reactionary film, and he really definitely did it with this
something along the lines of like Black Christmas. Yeah. Or Black Christmas, or the later another film called Give Us Tomorrow, which I call the British.
I think I've seen that one. I think I saw that one. Is that like another one where like they held the people hostage in the house and stuff? I can't remember exactly. Or like it's like robbers or something, right? Like robbers or something.
Yeah, let's just say Give Us Tomorrow is to fight for your life. What Till Death Do Us Part is to All in the Family.
Oh yeah, yeah, right. It's like just the British kind of the British version with its own cultural thing going on, like in the background.
The bloody British version, which came out in 1978, year after, but it still makes a good double feature with Fight for Your Life.
Was it based on Fight for Your Life, or is just a different like home invasion kind of story?
I think it could have been a coincidence or something of that matter. I'm not too sure because I can't imagine what director Donovan Winter was thinking. So God only knows. It could have been possible considering the filmography this dude has, like some like it's sexy, aka Comeback Peter, British sex comedy, World Without Shame, a naturist film. Again, fucking nude people.
Yeah.
Jesus. And Escort Girl, sexploitation. So I would not be surprised if he saw Fight for Your Life and he was like, boy, lad, I'm going to make me own version of this.
Yeah, he must have like really like, I don't think that's what, I don't know. I can't tell you if that's, you saw the actual movie or what, but this one came out
Fight for Your Life 1977,
right?
Yeah. Did it have a theatrical?
Fight for Your Life?
But did it have
a... What was it?
Sure, but did Fight for Your Life have a theatrical release in England, though?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure about that.
I wouldn't think so.
It was probably banned over there, right? Or something?
Yeah. It was eventually,
Considering it was on the Video Nasties list, I highly doubt that. If Thriller Killer didn't have much luck, then definitely not Fight for Your Life.
It was a... Fight for Your Life was like a New York regional low budget film too. It was like just what was it? It was filmed in upstate New York, I think, right? I think that's where it was. Yeah.
Upstate New York, actually in the upstate regions. But the Video Nasties list is the least fortunate thing that happened to Fight for Your Life, actually. Now you're probably wondering, when is this thing gonna come out on Blu-ray? Well, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, so
yeah, I know.
Unfortunately,
for sure.
Well, unfortunately, I don't think we're going to get a Blu-ray release because I have a sad story about that.
Oh, yeah,
you see, the original film negatives to Fight for Your Life, which was stored in a warehouse in Morristown, New Jersey, close to where I live, in 2012, the warehouse that it was in got flooded during Hurricane Sandy. As a result, it got destroyed. To paraphrase an interview by Bill Lustig from Diabolique magazine, November 22nd, 2014. I love the movie. I want to put it on Blu-ray. So after doing the SD transfer 10 years ago, in my best Bill Lustig impression, on the film, I shipped the negative back to the rights holders of the film in New Jersey. Just 2 weeks ago, I contacted the rights holder, look at the reaccess the negative so I can make an HD transfer of the film. And she informed me that 2 years ago during Hurricane Sandy, her basement flooded and the negatives were destroyed. Dramatic.
Yeah, that sucks. So we're not getting that.
Yeah.
I was just looking at the interview with the director, and he said it's not like these types of films had grand premieres. There was no Klieg lights, bleachers, or parade of stars. It just showed up on the marquee of the local theater that week and via word of mouth kept on playing. Yeah, I mean,
that's really the attitude of a lot of exploitation filmmakers. They don't expect their films to like live on in history, like Wizard of Oz or that bullshit. But it's the same thing. It reminds me of when Sean Cunningham said it was supposed to be a pot boiler Friday the 13th. They didn't expect grand stars. They just premiered it on the Lowe's in New York. It was a stroke of luck, really.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, nobody back then was really making films with much longevity in mind. I mean, this predates the home video market, you know, so it's
the horror stories, make money back
and then get out, you know, you're done.
And Hollywood thought, read another quote, Hollywood thought that everyone who was making films wanted to win an Oscar. That was a foolish assumption, and it wasn't true. There were many filmmakers, myself included, who wanted to make films to satisfy the audience that went to see them. I had respect for my audience. I wanted to give them what they wanted to see, and if receipts and extended theatrical runs are any indication, I was very successful.
Yeah, and just like Rob said, the whole prospect of home video was really just a foolish dream of the future, as the horror stories from Roger Corman's cult classics by Shout Factory has proven, considering they went through multiple hours of trying to clean up these films Corman produced, and like, oh my God, it's all damaged and shit like that.
And what did
the scratches? No, you could say.
I was just looking to see what the director made before this one. I guess he did The Filthiest Show in Town. I never saw that one, from 1973. I guess that was another grindhouse type movie, but yeah,
kind of like She Freak from David Freeman, something along those lines. But I'm looking up this guy's IMDb because Fight for Your Life. The Filthiest Show in Town. I can assume it's like a She Freak type of thing. It's on like the IMDb page, and
I don't know what exactly. Whatever.
The plot here says, the heads of the National Genital Television Network go on trial to defend their network over one of the highest rated shows, the very adult and very popular Mating Game.
That sounds weird.
Basically, it's the show. Wait a minute. The Mating Game? That's the same show from that talking vagina movie.
Chatterbox.
Yeah. The talking vagina movie. Actually, one of three talking vagina movies.
What were the other ones?
One of them was called Angel Below, Angel Above, really? Devil Below, and the second one was called Pussy Talk.
Never even heard of those, I don't think. Yeah, I know Chatterbox.
Yeah, basically.
I knew that one.
Yeah, Chatterbox is the one where the vagina thinks it's Adam Sandler and tries to be a smartass and all that shit. Pussy Talk is basically what would happen if Laura Gemser played Selena Kyle from Batman Returns, especially in all those scenes where the pussy's like,
sounds like The Exorcist or something to me. I don't know.
Yeah, no, The Exorcist vagina movie would be Angel Above, Devil Below, where basically what would happen if Pazuzu possessed some woman's clam tram and was like, you want a big cock.
But that's another story. That's
Yeah, but let's just say I know way too many fucked up movies. But anyway, so back to another fucked up movie. Fight for your life.
I was reading another little part of with William Sanderson, the interview with him, and he said he's actually haunted by the movie. It says, "I kind of blocked it out of my mind for many years, decades really. Until now, no one has really referenced it or taken it seriously." And then he thinks that like people like Quentin Tarantino are kind of like, you know, were ones that kind of championed the movie, and that's why it found its like kind of like another wave of like, you know, fame from people like that who really liked it. He loves the picture, isn't it?
Right.
I've actually heard that Quentin owns a film this? Print replica
yeah,
film
I think
print
he does,
of
yeah.
Fight for Your Life, so maybe right. we can get a Blu-ray if Quentin can find it out of the ramshackles of his film stock collection
it'd be awesome.
The
to,
Ark
like,
of the Covenant.
Have another like an early nice high definition version of this with the same audio commentary would be fine, but like maybe even another one with like some other people, like some critics or something. I don't know who would do it, but
yes.
Has Tarantino played it at the New Beverly?
So, but I know he played it at his film festivals too, down in Austin. I think he played it down there first.
They showed
it down there a few times, and so that's probably where I first heard about it. But I hadn't seen it until I got the DVD later on. I think that was like, you know, the late 90s, and then like in like the 2000s, like we were saying, like 2000 whatever it was, 5 or 6, like when it came out on DVD, that's where I first saw it. Because I had heard about it for so long, so I was like, I got to see this movie. And it definitely didn't disappoint, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I was like, whoa.
No.
I mean, it was just, you know.
Yeah, wow. Exactly.
Yeah, and to answer Rob's question, Fight for Your Life was indeed banned outright in Britain, but retitled and remarketed as needed throughout America.
Yeah, it's just one of those. You know, it seems like all they do in Britain is like ban stuff over there. They ban like so many like horror movies and stuff over there all the time. Back then, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
they
mean the video nasty thing like really was like ridiculous. Stupid. I mean, some of the times they were banning stuff just because of the cover
stupid,
art. They didn't even watch the movies. Yeah.
Driller Killer, they even banned one of my favorite movies, 1981, The Funhouse.
I mean, that's
actually.
Not really that bad.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
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 The Toby Hooper film?
Yeah, the Toby Hooper film written by Larry Block, who I'm actually friends with on Instagram. He told me that they banned it because it was too frightening with the freaks and all that jazz.
It's not that frightening, I don't think. I mean, after all the stuff we've watched, come on.
I think
we've seen some crazy stuff.
Yeah, well, it's still a well-made film.
But it's not my favorite. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of that. Like, I like, you know, everything after Texas Chainsaw is kind of like pales in comparison to me. It's, you know what I mean? Eaten Alive.
Yeah.
That was good. But like the Funhouse is kind of like, it's okay. It's okay. It's not that great. But, you know, compared to TCM. Yeah.
Still one of my favorites because I kind of have a soft spot for films where the ugly misfit is the hero or the one you meant to cheer for. That's why
it's a pretty good film.
Personal reasons. But that's why I love Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Friday the 13th because you feel more weight for the deformed guys like Leatherface, Jason Voorhees. They had so much more character or personality. And to a certain extent with the Turner family in Fight for Your Life because they were kind of downtrodden and more looked upon by society. That's why they gave more character to them actually.
Yeah,
so. I mean, it's okay if you don't share my sentiments. All I'm just sharing is explaining why I think Funhouse is one of my favorites because, like I said, I have a soft spot for misfits in horror, such as the punks in Return of the Living Dead or Caesar in Cabinet of Dr. Caligari.
Yeah, I like Toby Hooper's Life Force.
That's a really good one.
I have a similar.
Yeah, I love Life Force.
Yeah. I have a similar soft spot for
space
vampires. So
definitely a good subgenre.
She was just a naked space vampires, along with anything Armando Diasaro does.
What did he direct? Did he do the Living
Tombs of the Blind Dead, When the Screaming Stops, aka Grasp, The Lorelei's Grasp, and Night of the Sorcerers.
So what, is there any other movies like Fight for Your Life? Like, I guess it was inspired by like Desperate Hours, like the, that type of genre, like the hostage.
Desperate Hours,
you know,
the
people held hostage in their house subgenre of movie. Thriller, I guess.
Yeah, the Humphrey Bogart, that was Frederick March, aka Dr. Jekyll.
I don't know if it was 1990 with Mickey Rourke. I don't know if you saw that one, the remake of that. It was Mickey Rourke and Anthony Hopkins. It was like a remake of that one, but
sounds good. I like
Anthony. I like Anthony Hopkins, but you can never top Frederick March. I mean, the dude's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
The original one is really good. I like that one.
The one Paramount one, like the pre-code one.
Yeah, the most fucked up Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yeah, and I really like the one with Spencer Tracy too, as Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Yeah, that was a good, really good one.
I'm gonna make a joke. But we all know the best remake of Desperate Hours.
What is it?
The Reef. The Reef.
Dennis
you're Leary.
The ref,
actually, it's
The Ref.
It's pronounced The Reef. It's pronounced The Reef,
really?
Like
I thought
a Christmas
it was
a ref, reef.
Like he was a referee of the fighting going on.
No, it's The Reef, as in Christmas Reef, because it's about a bickering couple that won't shut the hell up. And so that drives the cat burglar Dennis Leary crazy during Christmas. So basically, imagine Black Christmas if Billy had to hear Lois Lane curse like a sailor all throughout the night, while Talia al Ghul herself, Olivia Hussey, just stood there fuck.
But I mean, I like that one. I like the movie The Ref or whatever, The Reef. You sure it's called The Reef? I don't know where you got that one from. The Reef.
Yeah, The Reef. I like the Christmas Reef, because both of them take place at Christmas, hence the Black Christmas reference. Actually, you could prove that exploitation film is like a giant spider web further influencing popular culture. And fun fact, John Carpenter, actually there's a weird symbiotic relationship between
Bob Clark and
Black Christmas and
it was sort of
Halloween.
Like it was like the precursor to Halloween. It was like it was the first holiday theme slasher and everything, and you know, like that type of stuff, you know, pretty much.
Yeah, if you don't count Silent Night, Bloody Night in 1972, or that was released earlier, or the segment from the 1972 Tales from the Crypt, but you wanted me to explain this. So the story goes is that Bob Clark and John Carpenter were friends back in the day, up until the unfortunate tragic death of Bob Clark in a car accident. So John Carpenter, so Carpenter explained that he was a big fan of Black Christmas. He thought it was a good movie. So he went up to Clark and was like, "Hey, Bobby, I like your film Black Christmas. Are you going to do like a sequel or something where we see Billy?" Bob basically explained to John, "Look, I'm not really that much of a horror guy. That was, I just only do this stuff for the paycheck. You know, I'm one of those work for hire kind of directors. Although, if I did have my chance, I would, my idea for a sequel would be, it's in the fall, the killer Billy gets released from the mental asylum, he goes back to the house, they finally kick his ass, and we call it Halloween." So, that's the paraphrase in my god-awful Bob Clark impression.
You don't get a lot of Bob Clark impressions.
Afterwards,
yeah, that's a good story.
There's your first.
I didn't really know that they were friends before that, though. I just thought like he saw the movie or something, and I didn't realize like they knew each other and stuff at all before that. That was interesting. Okay, cool.
Yeah, they're buddy buddies. So as a result, Bob Clark was like,
"Well, if you want to make this movie, go ahead. I give
like
you
we were saying,
blessing,
Bob Clark
go
made
nuts.
A whole bunch of like other types of genre films too. He did like A Christmas Story. He did Porky's.
Children children shouldn't play with dead things. Death Dream, the fucking super genius babies, pieces of crap.
He kind of was like a journeyman director that did all types of stuff. I don't know what his last movie was.
Yeah, and this was in like
Super Babies.
The Super Babies. Okay.
I never, I didn't ever watch that stuff.
Oh God.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
it's nothing like the baby. So, and this was like 74 or 76 that this conversation took place. So Carpenter just done Dark Star and was releasing Assault on Precinct 13 into the world.
That's an awesome
film. Goddamn,
I'd love to do like an episode on that movie too, and or the baby too. That would be a good one to talk about. I love that movie. It's so the crazy.
P.S. Rest in peace.
I always
peace
find it crazy that the guy that did, directed the baby, Ted Post, also did Magnum Force the same year. That was such a weird, talk about a weird, like, extreme, you know, juxtaposition between two different movies. You know what I mean?
But yeah, we definitely got to do Assault on Precinct 13, especially considering the tragic death of Austin Stoker, actually.
I did a post on our Instagram about
that. Yeah, very sad.
A little tribute to him. But I was thinking, whenever I hear Assault on Precinct 13 now, I always think about that other movie, Siege, or Self-Defense, you know, that one that I was talking about, you know, the one that was filmed up in Canada. It's sort of like the Canadian version of Assault on Precinct 13. That was an awesome film. I just discovered it last year.
The Can-Exploitation version. The Can-Exploitation version of Assault on Precinct 13.
I really like that one.
The 83 one by Paul Paul Donovan. Yeah. Oh, but yeah, it's the Paul Donovan film along I think Maria. Oh no, never mind. It's saying Maria O'Connor, but that could be bullshit. But it's got Tom Noreeni, Brenda Bazzini,
all those famous actors that everyone Bizinette knows,
or something of that matter. It was one of the yeah, and it was one of those early films that New Line Cinema released before they became the house that Freddy built. Though I personally like the one in the dark better
too. Before that,
Viva that Chiba.
Like the first, those are like the. I think I first heard about Sonny Chiba in True Romance. That's where I first heard about him. Because like you know, because Clarence is always talking about like how he's a huge fan of Sonny Chiba, so that's where I first heard about him. And then for years I kept looking for the movies and I couldn't find them. Then one day I was at Suncoast Video. I don't know if you ever heard of that place. It was like kind of like a, but I went.
I've heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Suncoast it was in the mall. Video. I went used in to be there at the
like
mall. One
day and I was like looking around. And I saw they had all the Street Fighter movies on VHS. So that's where I picked them up. I was like, oh, this is awesome. I was so happy to finally find them. So, you know, that's right.
And funny that it's December, because on a week ago on that day in 1978, you'll never guess what was playing at the Harris alongside with Taxi Driver. Yeah, it was a double feature.
That must have been an awesome double
feature. Taxi Driver, of all things.
That would be an awesome one to go see.
Yeah, yeah, basically strung out.
I don't know. 70s I'm trying style to think of the farmer also played with Taxi Driver. I'm not sure if I saw that somewhere. I don't know. Because I have my list of like you know my
the farmer
what was playing on the Deuce like you know at the grindhouses like you know I have one right now like what was playing today like a whole bunch of like crazy stuff like anyways.
Yeah, the farmer makes a better double feature. It's sort of the same type of idea, considering they're about
in a way like you know the veteran that comes back and like he's has to fight against whatever it was. You know, like, kind of different story, but sort of similar in a way. Different eras, though. Yeah.
Pissed off. Pissed off. That's veteran exploitation, I call it.
Yeah. Yeah. Sort of
it's
like
a precursor to Rambo.
Same idea as that. Yeah. Before there was a. Yeah, Rambo.
Rambo exploitation. Yeah, so that's our December fun fact of the day, along with I also forgot to mention today's December double feature is Herschel's Old Town Road with 2000 awesome. Maniacs and
Moonshine I've been watching Mountain. Like stuff every single day. So I watched Fight for Your Life and Driller Killer last night. That was my double feature, and then I don't know what I'm going to watch tonight. I'm just kind of like going like each day. I'm just like looking around for stuff. Like, you know, I'm trying to do like,
Is there a commentary on Driller Killer?
Cause yeah, I just watched it like on streaming. I didn't like watch like, you know, the Blu-ray or anything, but yeah, I think Arrow Video just, they released that. They must have like a good, like audio commentary on their release of it, but I, you know, I haven't heard that. But yeah, Abel's like a really interesting dude. I mean, like I love like all his, you know, his ideas and stuff. You know, like King of New York is one of my most favorite movies from him. I think that's like just such an awesome crime film. Yeah. Miss 45 and the funeral and Miss 45.
He's done
some really awesome movies over the years. Yeah, that's some awesome.
Like, holy crap! Yeah, personally, Driller Killer is my favorite of the bunch. Mostly on the grounds that the guy with the squeegee at the window is rumored to be Bruce Willis.
Reno Miller.
Reno Miller, the guy that bitches more than bitches more throughout the movie, than like an.
I'll tell you when it's done, man.
Yeah, basically
get things.
Whatever. Then I love that.
Yeah, and you don't know how to bitch. You only gotta do is gotta bitch, not eat, not a bitch, not shit, not a bitch. But you don't know nothing about pain.
Little scenes. And.
Yeah, and Leo Tolstoy in the church.
I like that. I like that, that music group, Tony Coca-Cola and the Roosters. It's a good. Yeah, it's like,
yeah, the wannabe like Sex Pistols. Like, that seemed
like to be like right at the height of like the whole like, you know, punk kind of like, you know, punk scene like in New York and stuff with like CBGBs and stuff. Like they had that whole, you know what I mean?
Yeah. 2 years after, right. Because we already had the Ramones, Television. Blondie, right. Steve Bader's and the bands. Dead Boys.
Blondie and all those people.
But I personally say if you want a better punk movie, just stick with like
I think I've seen some of that. I didn't see the whole thing. But I also like The Decline of Western Civilization. That's a good, really good one. Yeah.
Civilization.
Yeah,
it's another good one with Darby Crash. There's also Jubilee.
I love Repo Man too.
Repo Man. Or if you want to really stretch it. Or if you really want to stretch it, Decline of Western Civilization too, when they start getting into the fucking glam metal.
Those people are such messes. Yeah, he's like sitting in the drunk pool, like Chris drinking.
Drunk Chris Holmes. I don't know, man. I just don't like it, man. I'd rather be a small star. Here, mom, have a drink.
It's like those guys were nuts. It's like you don't even know if they're gonna like survive till the end of the movie, like type thing. They're so like wasted on.
Hence why Megadeth came around as like the saving grace.
I can't
all these drunken idiots. But hey, we're gonna get saved.
I can't listen to like that like glam rock metal stuff anymore. Like I just don't like it at all. Like I kind of grew up on some of that, but it's like now I just can't listen to it. It just kind of turns me off like for some reason. I just don't like it. Yeah, it's just that's probably exactly what it is.
Pretentious.
Too overindulgent and like just I don't like that.
It's too over.
Yeah.
It's too overindulgent and pretentious for you.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is.
I can only think of one that I kind of enjoy. And that's Whitesnake, and that's because I have a soft spot for Derek. For baritones,
I listen to them.
Blame my love
day,
of gothic rock for that.
I can't really listen to it anymore. Like I was like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Personally, I'm more. Yeah, on the musical side, I prefer like the more gothic and punk stuff, and horror film scores like John Carpenter, Danny Elfman.
Those guys are good.
Fabio Rizzi. Riz Ortolani, Cannibal Holocaust, Mondo Kane, and
that's all good.
Boots and Savages.
Yeah, I like all that stuff.
A fucking disco beat down in Boots and Savages.
those movies had some great soundtracks. Like the Emmanuel movies did too. Kind of like disco.
Oh yeah. Unless we forget. Should we even get started on the nice blaxploitation themes? Supernatural, Woman.
Yeah, we love all that music.
Yeah, basically Tim Burton's Coffee.
Yeah, I've been trying to watch like a little bit of everything this month. I try to mix it up, like watch a little bit of blaxploitation, a little bit of, you know, horror, a little bit of, you know. I'm kind of just like going by whatever I feel like watching that night.
Yeah,
you know,
which
I won't like try to program anything. I'll just kind of like whatever, like kind of just like, you know, whatever I'm in the mood for that each day, like, you know, so I do it.
Yeah. For, my December, it'll be mostly double features of any kind of screwed up genre that I could
you're kind of making up the, you're kind of like making up your own market. Genres so, like what was the one with, was it Class of 1984 and Death Wish? I can't remember, or Death Wish 2, like what was it, like Vicious Gangs or something?
I could round it up most of the for the audience, because they're like, what the hell are they talking about? So I'll do like a recall. Mm-hmm. The one you're talking about is Day One, Punks versus Vigilantes, with Class of 1984 and Death Wish 2. They're basically themes. And Day Two was...
I was just going to say, I watched Class of 1984.
Oh, sure, sure. You can
tell. It still holds up pretty well, I think. I mean, it has a little bit of, you know, that 80s kind of corniness to it, but it's still pretty good. I mean, you know, there's some good scenes, like the ending of the movie is pretty awesome still. It's like, you know, when he's like fighting the kids like in the school and stuff, in the, you know, mm-hmm. what I mean, they're kind of like fighting in the dark and stuff. That was pretty awesome.
Yeah, and plus yeah. I've been hearing the song I Am the Future on my way to work.
It's a good song.
Recently, Alice Cooper. I've been playing that. Yeah, I've been playing that, plus His Eyes by Pseudo Echo. Like those are like my two go-tos.
Whenever I hear that, I always think of Violet
doing
her dance in the room.
So,
you know.
There's a man with no life in his eyes. But anyways, Day Two was Armando D'Osario with Night of the Sorcerers and When the Screaming mm-hmm. Stops, a.k.a. The Lorelei's Grasp. And Day Three was what I like to call the Cannibal Can-Can, with Cannibal Holocaust and Cannibal Ferox. Nice. Yeah. Day Four was pre-Jenny Ortega Goth with House of Usher and Black Sunday, two of my favorites.
Yeah, that's awesome.
The Day Four was mm-hmm. what I like to call Kung Fu Siblings with The Street Fighter and Sister Street Fighter. Let's see. Day Six, another Herschel Gordon Lewis double feature, Herschel's Girls with Blood Feast and Scum of the Earth. Day Seven was what I like to call the Orwell Olympics, basically a dystopian future where sports have to do with something.
That's awesome.
Death Race 2000 and Rollerball.
You gotta do every single day.
Yeah. Day Eight was basically what I like to call. Not too much. I'll be as brief as I can because I don't want to basically. Day Eight was what I like to call insert alien political joke here.
That's a good one.
They live and kill the clowns from outer space.
I like that one a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, one of my favorite John Carpenter movies. Day Nine was Vampire Jamboree with Life Force and Fright Night. Women in Prison with Big Dollhouse and Women in Cages with fucking Pam Grier. Then we have Russ Meyer Delinquents with Faster Pussycat Kill Kill.
I also like Mudhoney a lot.
Motor Psycho.
That's a good one. Yeah. I haven't seen that one.
Black Snake is one of my favorites.
Have to check that one out.
Yeah, it's basically I have a soft spot for chicks cracking the whip, so Check to the Queen and all that jazz. So woohoo! And then another theme was what I like to call 99-cent zombies, City of the Living Dead, and Hell of the Living Dead.
That's a cool little idea. I like this. I like that. No, I mean, I like that idea of like you're kind of creating your own little, you know, titles for the different double features. That's kind of cool. I like that. Yeah, themes and stuff.
Like themes, absurd themes, Monty Python stuff. Then we had Getting Harry with The Howling and Night of the Werewolf starring Paul Naschy. Then, of course, we can't have exploitation without some porn here and there. So we had Hard Candy and the 1976 Alice in Wonderland. Yeah. Tim Burton had Futterwhacking. These guys had Fuckerwhacking.
Oh, my God.
Fuckerwhacking. And personally, I know Peter's going to love this. Day 15.
Giallo.
It's a me. Giallo.
Guido the Fat, so...
Death walks at midnight and all the colors of the dark.
There's nothing.
And luckily we're almost done, so I won't bore you guys to death.
Exaggerated Italian. Oh yeah, you were right.
Well, I'm quarter Italian, so
Guido the Fat, so
Well, I'm quarter Italian, so I...
It's a me, a giallo.
Ken the Guido, but finally... Day 16 was Black Vampires with Blackula and Gonta and Hess, and finally the most recent one, Two Castles for the Price of One House on Haunted Hill and Tingler.
That was awesome.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, I'm kind of insane that way. But anyways,
I've watched like 30 movies already in the past, 18 days. So, I mean,
To make it easier, do you have any
highlights?
Ones that come to your mind?
Highlights of stuff. Well, you know, I
guess my highlight Burial Ground that you recommended. I hadn't seen
Webster.
Ken was talking about it, and I watched it the other night. It was great. I loved it.
There was a friend on Instagram that I'm friends with named Hopsy the Clown. I asked him for movies to recommend that we talk about, and Burial Ground was the first one that we talked about. And I immediately told him about White Zombie Webster, because for all of you that don't know, Burial Ground, another zombie classic of the Grindhouse era,
he's like 25 years old.
He's supposed to be a little kid, but he's
a 35-year-old dwarf man. Yeah. Basically, it's a dwarf man playing kid, even though he sounds like a man, and the director did that because what happens in the film, slight spoiler alert, the dwarf kid turns into a zombie and in an incestuous Flowers in the Attic route, chows on his mother's milk.
That's a good reason to watch it.
Yeah, you could see why they didn't pick an actual child, because let's just say it would have been more... Basically, in that Twilight Zone, a helicopter accident
a movie that I liked that I just kind of watched it for the first time was Poor Pretty Eddie. Have you ever heard of that one? Have you guys seen that one? Yeah. I thought it was really interesting. Like as a movie, visually and stuff. I just thought it was. They did it was just a weird Deliverance in a way, another version of Deliverance, but the black girl gets stuck in this little hick town, and it's kind of hard to explain the whole, and then she's kind of stuck there, and they kind of
to tie this back to Fight for Your Life, much like that film. Poor Pretty Eddie has an alternate title that hilariously is tied to another song, Heartbreak Motel,
Redneck County,
which is very funny as hell.
The other alternate title.
Well, since my Eddie left me, I found a new place to dwell. It's down at the end of 42nd Street at Heartbreak Motel. Well, I'll be so lonely, baby. I'll be so lonely I could die.
Round of applause, everyone. It was Elvis.
Thank you. I'm the Evel Knievel Elvis. Elvis, who done way too many blaxploitation films after realizing that his other films were shit, except for Jailhouse Rock and Viva Las Vegas. Imagine if Elvis did exploitation.
Yeah, I know.
Elvis films were exploitation.
I know.
He had a genre to himself.
He had his own genre, basically. Elvisploitation.
Yeah.
Elvisploitation.
They're
exploitation films. They're
low
budget. Elvis, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's. I mean, it's just the that was the 50s and 60s version cool of ice. Cool as Ice with Vanilla Ice in the 90s. I mean, that's the same thing. Yeah, right. Although I mean,
Elvis Rebel Without a Cause.
Yeah.
Elvis actually made
Jailhouse Rock. I really like Jailhouse Rock.
King Creole is quite good. Like Jailhouse Rock.
Viva Las Vegas.
And what's the other one?
Yeah, that's good. I think is
the other one. I like Jailhouse Rock.
A good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
My favorite's probably King Creole.
I mean, you know, some of the other ones, you know, I kind of like.
Yeah.
Or was it, what is it? Speedway, I think. Or I kind of like. Yeah, that's like the one where he's like a race car driver.
I don't think I've seen that one.
No. Then there's like Clam Bake and all those ones.
Okay.
Yeah. And going back to poor Pretty Eddie, speaking of weird people that you never associate with exploitation, you'll never guess who was originally considered for the role of Liz Weatherly. I'll give you a hint. She's a famous Star Trek actress.
It's sort of the same, her and Leslie Uggams, they're kind of the same, about the same age. Like, they're probably kind of from the same generation. I think all those women.
Yeah.
Yeah, she could have done it.
Michelle Nichols was originally considered for the role.
She was good
actually.
In Truck Turner. She was like wicked good in that one.
Yeah.
She was very. She was.
I'm guessing she turned it down. Yeah. I'm guessing she turned it down because of the weird budget crescendo, because the main cast were paid under the table in cash by the producer Michael Tevis, the primary incentive for such high profile celebrities to appear in exploitation. It's like,
that movie was kind of messed up, but I just thought it was nice, like, interesting. Like, you know, I just thought it was like well made and stuff, even though it was like really like screwed up and crazy. Like Shelley Winters was in it, and you know, it's kind of a weird mixture of people in there.
And it's it's in the same camp as Fight for Your Life, literally the Brave Delights, 20 Grindhouse Cinema Shockers.
It has a sort of similar theme.
Yeah, though personally my favorite of the bunch,
that movie's really messed up list has
got to be Bloodsucking Freaks.
I've only seen it once. But
I am.
This thing is like sick, crazy stuff. Really? Oh, wow.
I got it on DVD, actually. Yeah, I think you might have saw it when I did that live stream with Jim. Yeah, the shit ton of movies in there and other stuff. That's another.
Right.
I can open up a theater with that one. The next lyric. resurrect the deuce and have people like Ying the crap beaten out of. But Bloodsucking Freaks, that's one of my favorite trauma movies.
And I just watched Combat Shock.
Toxic Avenger.
Have you seen that one?
I am.
I really like that one too.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah,
that's good.
It actually makes a good double feature with First Blood,
because there's an awesome dark side of war in a way. I don't know if you guys have seen Thou Shalt Not Kill Except. Have you ever seen that one? That's a really good one. That's an awesome film. It's sort of like...
I've heard of it.
Except. Yeah. It's thou like Sam Raimi is in it. He plays like a cult leader. It's crazy. Like a really fun movie. Like, awesome. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's like... It'd be like a good like Grindhouse
Strikers War.
Did you ever see also The Intruder? Did you ever see that one? That's another one with like Sam Raimi. That's I love those movies that are like kind of.
I've heard of it.
Yeah.
I kind of heard of Intruder.
Yeah.
I kind of have a story of how I've heard of Intruder. Well, before I tell are any of you guys familiar with the band Skinny Puppy?
I know them. Yeah. I used to listen to them in college.
Yeah, because. They're an industrial group. They have a video that they did in 1989 called Warlock, where the video is just basically a compilation of graphic scenes from horror and giallo movies, some from the GCDB, and Intruder is one of them. The films include, well, a lot of them are Dario Argento movies, like Four Flies on Grey Velvet, Deep Red, Suspiria, Tenebrae, Venomania, Opera. What else is in there?
Yeah.
No, that's not in there, but I wish it was. But there's some other movies, like the Dario Argento World of Horror documentary, Combat Shock, that's also in there, Demons, The Beyond, Hellraiser, Hellraiser 2, Bad Taste, Dead Buried, Phantasm 2, Luther the Geek, Maniac Cop, Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer from Beyond, Reanimator.
Sounds like they made a video by taking all of my DVDs and cutting them together.
Parents, Death Warmed Up, Hidden Crimes, Intruder, Dune, Eraserhead, Altered States, some samples from Videodrome, and even the Maniac 2 sequel, Mr. Robbie, that never saw the light of day, which was basically Joe Spinell's remake. It was basically Joe Spinell's remake of The Psychopath, which was discussed on another 42nd Street.
From the Deuce. I don't know if it was
Forever podcast, December, actually. The December. The Psychopath.
What happened with Gigi?
Yeah, Gigi.
Some guy was like after her. I don't know what you were saying, something like that. I don't know, some weird story. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, with Gigi Graham? Yeah, she went offline. Yeah, she went offline. Yeah.
So sort of like what happened with Adrienne King when she did Friday the 13th Part 2.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
She supposedly had a stalker. After the first movie was a success, she had a stalker, which makes the opening scene a lot more disturbing. Basically, she got the same treatment as Jodie Foster with John Hinckley Jr., except without a president getting shot.
That's
your bizarre factoid of the day, as I got a whole treasure chest of them.
God.
Be very quiet. I'm hunting residents.
Is there any other stuff that we missed about Fight for Your Life that you wanted to talk about, or is it like, did we cover everything?
I believe that, we talked about the fact that it died in my state, New Jersey, which I apologize on behalf of our state that we killed Fight for Your Life. Hurricane Sandy.
Yeah, it's too bad. I mean, that would be awesome for us. On Blu-ray. Hopefully they can do it sometime. unless, someone else has like a copy of it, like a good print of it, like you were saying. That'd be good. I don't know.
Well, yeah, so some other fun facts. Even though the film was rejected for a UK cinema certificate in 1981 by the BBFC, it later ended up on DPP 74, listed in official video nasties.
There was another little thing. It said the marketing of this film was unique and unusual. There was a theatrical trailer for the film that was geared toward Caucasian audiences, then another theatrical trailer for the film that was geared towards African-American audiences, using the alternate title of the movie Stayin' Alive. Another example would be the teaser trailer, which was... Yeah, go ahead.
Another example would be the teaser trailer, which was another... the 30-second clip, actually, without music and sound, no still photography from the movie, along with the title and MPAA
Pick, because it really was like the epitome of the grindhouse exploitation cinema. You know what I mean? Like the whole from the promotional thing to the effect of it had on audiences. It was just a really good movie, I thought. Just it's a crowd pleaser, but.
It's a crowd pleaser.
I think it was like it. I think Death Wish sort of had the same impact. Crowd everybody would be like rooting for him to like get back at like the robbers and stuff, and so that was the same type of idea. Yeah.
You're like, holy shit on that one, but similar with like coffee or I spit on your grave.
Me and Rob were talking about we were saying how when they these movies they you have to you have to have the really rough, brutal stuff going on. So when they do get revenge, it has an impact. You know what I mean? If you don't have the really nasty stuff, have a reason for them to want to get revenge, then it doesn't really work. You have to have the real extreme scenes of people getting messed up and to have it work out, and so that when the person goes for their revenge, it's satisfying for the audience. You know what I mean? So it's that type of thing.
Exactly, yeah.
For example, in Last House on the Left, there's the scenes of the Marie crew slaughtering the daughters. Yeah. And then once the parents, Maria and Phyllis, once the parents actually stoop to their level and do the slaughtering, they do get their wish. Right. But so unfortunately, void is still
kind
empty.
Of it doesn't usually go the way you want it to go. You it doesn't really... help anybody. It just kind of ruins your whole existence, I guess, in a way. If you I guess it just depends on the thing. Yeah.
The moral of the story, kids. The moral of the story, kids, is that just because you killed the guys who killed your kids does not mean it's gonna make your kids come back from the grave and be like, "Hello, mom and dad." That's what I always wondered about the mindset of these vengeance people. It's, what the hell were they thinking? But also were they expecting like their kids to come back from the grave? As if they were
justice, but
it's not that. It's just at the same time, it's justice. I mean,
it's not.
That's all it is. It's not, they're not going to get anything back, but they're just
right.
Tipping the scales back to neutral, you know.
Personally, I say just send them off to prison for a long time because, to quote Angus Grimm from Phantasm 4,
but also it's movies too. It's not like, you know, they're not trying to like really do anything beyond like just having an exciting film. You know what I mean? They're not trying to like, you know, help the society like over. It's supposed to be like cathartic. Like when you watch people getting revenge in these movies, it's supposed to be like kind of like instead of you going out and doing it, you can watch the movie.
Yeah, it's satisfying.
Get the same thrills or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to be like a fanfic writer, so I get the writing side of things, so
the story I heard about when they pitched Death Wish to Bronson, he didn't realize at first they were talking about a movie, and the guy says, okay, so the idea is the guy, you know, he takes a gun, he goes out and he just starts executing criminals, and then Bronson's like, yeah, okay, let's do that. He's like, oh really, you want to do the movie? He's like, wait, you're talking about a movie?
Okay, it sounds fun. Oh, it's a movie?
Which is ironic.
That's a kind of a fun... I never heard that story.
Which is even funny because the original book that it was based on, novel by Brian Garfield, was actually more anti-vigilante than it was pro-vigilante. Kind of like you'd be surprised, actually. In fact, the main character wasn't called Paul Kersey, but Paul Benjamin, believe it or not. At the time of its release, it was criticized for its apparent support of vigilantism and advocating unlimited punishment of criminals. Allegedly, the novel denounced vigilantism, where the film embraced it, actually.
Yeah, this is one of my favorites. I love the third one. That's probably why the film is awesome. I just love the... It just goes, like, off the rails, like, you know what I mean? It just goes, like... It's like Rambo, like, in the city, basically, is what it is. First Blood in the City. It's awesome.
I like the third film more than the second film, to tell you the truth, because how do I explain it? Death Wish 2, the problem with it is that it didn't had trouble deciding, does it want to be like a serious philosophical movie, or do it want to be like a popcorn flick? Say what you will about Death Wish 3, it wants to be a stupid, dumb popcorn movie. That's better off for it.
You go to the movies, you want to like.
This was when Michael Winner kind of went off the rails and decided to do like exploitation stuff, like The Sentinel, supernatural gatekeeper movie with Chris Sarandon becomes a McRib for naked satanic lesbians.
I remember there was a lot of like good actors in it though, right? There's like a whole cast of like awesome like.
I got it on Blue. Chris Sarandon, Jeff Goldblum, Christopher Walken, the Penguin. Holy shit! He also made that remake of The Wicked Lady where Faye Dunaway goes around whipping people, which is kind of weird.
I don't think I've seen that
Ironic, The Wicked Lady.
I don't know.
Yeah, and to tie it, which is very funny, because to tie it back to Death Wish 3, there was a story going around that, Michael Winner got shit in the press because... some chick that he was dating at the time reported to the tabloids, the Daily Star and News of the World, and claimed that Michael Winner whipped her and used her as a sex slave.
Okay.
Yeah, Sandy Grizzle was her name. She played in the scene where a bunch of punks attempted to have their way with a topless girl.
I don't know. Okay.
Yeah, it was one of the scenes that got overshadowed by all the crazy crap. Yeah, I was also thinking of,
you know who I really thought was good in Death Wish 3 was Gavin O'Hurley. Gavin O'Hurley, he was like, you know, the main, you know, he's like the main bad guy. I forget his name, though. What is his name in that? Manny, that's who it is.
Gavin O'Hurley, really the character he plays. And I only knew Manny him
before Fracker. That from he played Chuck on Happy Days. He played like the brother on Happy Days when I was like, you know, years before.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was also, and he's also the son of Dan O'Hurley, who to horror fans is Connell Cochran in Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, and the old man in RoboCop movies.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
The old man, that guy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's his son.
Yeah. RoboCop, the city is a cancer. You don't know much about Halloween. You thought of. You thought of.
RoboCop is one of my top three films.
I have a friend named Malaysian Sphinx who basically compared RoboCop to I Spit on Your Grave.
It's so extreme, like the way they like kill him and stuff, and like it's
how she
like
said it was like a rape.
I know you're kind of. I kind of understand where like what that's coming from. Where that's
And plus it follows the convention of a person getting assaulted by like the lowest scum of the society and just getting the revenge back. Like a rape and revenge film, and I said that's also like, on par with 45 in a certain extent.
You have to have like the most like nasty like you know attacks on people. So then when they have when they do the revenge, it actually makes you want to like root for them. You know what I mean? Because if it's just someone gets like slapped and like oh yeah, I'm gonna get revenge now and go shoot like a whole bunch of people, it doesn't make sense. You have to have it be like something like really like extreme. So like when they do go get revenge, it just has its like you know it makes sense to you know what I'm saying.
That's one of the reasons I think that
because they kill the dog John or Wick something, right?
This movie wasn't as impactful as it could have been because
they
kill his like Wick, a puppy and they steal his car. I'm like, well,
much
like
I think it's a little bit too. It's just too much for me. I mean,
I just don't really care less, but
I didn't do it. Just one of those things.
It's
overrated. You know, like when you see stuff,
definitely overrated.
Yeah, but. But for RoboCop, I think it's more closer to Miss 45, in my opinion, probably because the characters have some sort of exceptionality with Miss 45, Santa, and her muteness. With RoboCop, it's Alex Murphy with his deformed body that later becomes robotic. Yeah, he's trying to remember stuff.
Yeah, but
kind of like with Donna, who's trying to be more outspoken. Up until the end of the movie, where after she gets shot, she's like, I just assumed that the bullet, in this case, a literal magic bullet theory, where the bullet went to her vocals and made him active for a little bit, and she's like,
okay, I was just going to. I was going to just wrap things up here since I think we're kind of like,
the story,
we kind
kids.
Of went through everything we wanted to talk about, right? With everything? Okay, so to wrap things up, I just wanted to...
Yeah, it's very... I have to admit, it's very sad. I have to say, even though it's sad to see you guys I am also very happy that I got this pleasure to get to talk to you guys.
Yeah, we should. We'll just have
hopefully
to,
we can do more stuff like this in the future and
topics to
script
do and
it out.
I just want to keep it like if I do more episodes, I just want to keep it like real, like authentic Grindhouse. That was like my main idea. You know what I mean? Instead of doing like weird like modern stuff, I just want to keep it like the stuff that actually played in the theaters.
Yeah, keep it in the Grindhouse stuff. Like you said you wanted to do like an Austin Stoker type of thing.
Yeah, that would be like a good movie.
You said also Austin Stoker and Assault on Precinct 13. Like a
John Carpenter double feature or something like that, or you know, like, that would be kind of good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll put that in our text chat, which we'll also alternately call the 42nd Street Podcast Writers Room.
Say that we have our new Instagram now.
To the Writers Room.
Grindhouse Database on Instagram, so you can, if people want to follow that, they can follow us there. And do you guys have any stuff you want to like promote or anything, or just your websites and stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll let Rob go first.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Well, I post new reviews on my YouTube channel every Monday. So, yeah, definitely check that out.
You kind
and
of
I do like a mix also of stuff, modern like exploitation stuff films and as well, new, not new only the old stuff.
All types of. Right. Yep. Cool.
Yeah.
And as you long just as did an a, exploitation you, film. You just, a little while ago, you just the talked theme, to yep, Josiah yep. Howard, right? Like, you guys did like your little thing.
Yeah, I interviewed him about blaxploitation and his book, and we talked about an upcoming blaxploitation film that was found in somebody's garage, and we'll get a
It is on Vinegar Syndrome right now, I think. But yeah, I really want to see released, that one. I'm hoping that he can like review that this month. Blu-ray for us, like if you know if he has the time to do it. Yeah. Right. That's awesome. Yeah,
I'm sure he will, because he wrote the like the liner notes or the booklet for it.
Because I love that genre, as you know. So,
me too. Yeah. And this one takes place in L.A., which is pretty cool because not too many blaxploitation films were West Coast. Yeah, that'll be seem to mostly be East Coast.
East Coast in the New York area.
And Ken, where can people find you on Instagram?
Yeah, me too.
On Instagram, which actually to plug that. Thank you for listening to the show. This episode of 42nd Street Forever was brought to you by First Rob's Exploitation Reviews. Go over there and you'll find some good stuff done by Mr. McGee. Recently, he did Skyscraper with Anna Nicole Smith and a movie called Alice Goodbody, which is basically for people who got out of the Hollywood Boulevard screening thinking to themselves, this needs more sex.
Alice Goodbody. Oh, yeah. Okay.
And Alice Goodbody.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's also Hollywood Boulevard. So, and you could find me, well, I actually have like two Instagram accounts, Mr. Boogie Oogie Man, which is my personal account. It used to be a Batman RP account until it got too depressing. But the main one I do is Gotham City Drive-In Official. Much like with Rob's reviews, we do horror, cult, exploitation, and grindhouse. Recently, we did the movie Freaky, which is basically a slasher Freaky Friday. Right. Still better than The Hot Chick. Then again, anything is better than The Hot Chick. And to tie this back into the world of grindhouse, coming up for the holidays, we got ourselves a slasher classic, Silent Night, Deadly Night, re-released, where it's basically about the world's greatest story involving a kid traumatized by a killer Santa, and he goes around slaughtering everybody, including Linnea Quigley, through the power of deer antler food.
I really found that scene disturbing with the grandfather. That like really creeped me the hell out when I was a little kid. Yeah, it just was like I was probably like not that much older than the little kid, so I was like, when I saw it, I was like, oh my god, I was just like, oh my, I think I'm gonna have nightmares after this one.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you and Disney it. And Rudy okay, Giuliani so can go off. Straight to hell for killing 42nd
exactly.
Street.
Until the next episode
as the
of
filmmakers
42nd
say,
Street
cut,
Forever,
that's
this is
a wrap.
Pete Roberts, Rob McGee, and Ken from Gotham City Drive-In, and we'll see you next time. Take care, guys.